You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show was born out of a desire to help guide parents and adolescent service industry professionals alike to professional resources as they face critical moments with their children and or clients. Now, what better way to start things on the right path is if you're healthy yourself. I think one of the things that's important that a lot of us as parents are out there, we're concerned about our children, but not necessarily our own health as well. My guest today is going to be able to talk to us a little bit about our own health as well as the health of our children. My guest is Dr. Machino, and he has been practicing medicine for over 25 years and now imparts his education of nutrition through seminars, DVDs, books, and his own Health Talk radio program. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan. Nice to be with you.
Hey, I got to tell you, been doing the show now for about a year, and we received more questions for you than we have at any other time. So apparently, I think we have hit on something that our listeners are very much interested in.
Well, I'll be happy to discuss any of the details around nutrition, exercise, supplementation. Those things that I've been teaching about for the last 30 years. So you go ahead and fire away.
Well, I think to start off with, let's talk a little bit about your latest book, Optimal Living. It's the 7 steps of a healthy, fit, age-resistant body. Tell us a little bit about that and sort of your motivation to write this book.
You know, I guess the question is what makes the book unique, you know, because there are a lot of books out there talking about, you know, healthy diet and exercise, and people need to know that that's a foundation principle to look after your body. The National Cancer Institute tells us that 70 to 90% of cancers are avoidable through better lifestyle behaviors. The same is probably true for cardiovascular disease. So these are the two leading killers in our society. In most cases, you know, we're doing ourselves in by not having the right nutrition and lifestyle practices that could help to avoid these problems. But a lot, you know, most people have heard that before. If they're a professional, then they have some awareness of that. What's unique about the book is that it shows what happens in the body's aging clock after the age of 40 that sets the stage for decline, decay, degeneration, including some mental health problems around dementia, you know, memory loss and immune system decline and all the things that go on after the age of 40 that sets the stage for a lot of degenerative illnesses that we see down the road, from arthritis to osteoporosis to increased risk of cancer to dementia and prostate enlargement. And understanding what those metabolic time bombs look like, really what this book brings forward is what are the proactive for people who want a more highly functional body and mind for the longest period of time. It says, in addition to diet and exercise, there are some key natural supplements that have been shown to be highly efficient at countering many of the genetic time bombs so that you can preserve your joint cartilage, you can keep your immune system stronger, you can manage menopause more naturally, you can help to prevent prostate enlargement from occurring and help to reduce that prostate size, and things you can do to reduce your risk of cancer, which normally increases after the age of 50, things you can do to help give your brain the nutrients it requires to make really vital neurotransmitters and to stop oxidative stress from causing some neurodegenerative problems as well. So after the age of 40, it shows you how to stage in other things through supplementation that are strongly evidence-based based on whether you're a man or a woman.
Well, and I noticed that, and I've been reading it for about the last week, and it's interesting as any time I start reading something and I'm around other people, they then start asking me questions about it, and this was one of those that, again, I got lots of questions from people around me. What I found was, as I was reading it, is that a lot of it was reminding us of a lot of the things that we should be doing. I mean, it was reminding me about fruits and vegetables. What I liked was that it also seemed to touch on the differences between certain fruits and vegetables or certain carbohydrates. And I found that to be very interesting. I also, it mentions the five categories of carbohydrates in step one. And what percentages of carb intake should come from what category, and how that may change based on a person's activity level. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think a lot of people out there may think, you know, as long as I'm eating my, you know, my salad, you know, three times a week or whatever, I should be okay. And I noticed in there that, you know, if that salad's iceberg lettuce, it's not going to do you as much good as if it's spinach, you know, so...
Share a little bit about that. This comes to the foundation. You know, carbohydrates have gotten such a bad rap in recent years. People are afraid to eat carbs. You know, I'm on a low-carb diet. I need low carbs, otherwise I'm going to gain weight. And, you know, in fairness to carbohydrates, the truth is that in certain fruits and vegetables and legumes are the phytonutrients that have the strongest capacity to help reduce your risk, particularly of cancer, than anything else you could ever put into your body. So you can't just throw all the carbs out. You have to understand that there's different categories of carbs. So I believe about 30% of all your carbohydrates that you have in a day should come from the excellent category, things that are very low glycemic but loaded with protective nutrients, especially the cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, bok choy, and then spinach and rapini, and then getting some beans and peas and oats. These, even though these are not the best-tasting carbs in the world, they all have special protective nutrients that do vital things that can dramatically cut cancer risk. So you have to get 30% of the carbs you eat each day should come from that category. Then there's a good category where it's a little more glycemic, some of the sweeter fruits and vegetables, but they have phytonutrients, beta-carotene and lycopene and other carotenoids and other flavonoids from berries and grapes. Excuse me, strawberries, those things that have got, they're a little bit sweeter, even carrots, so they can upset your blood sugar a little bit, but about 30% of your carb calories make sense to come from those protective nutrients as well. And then there's the intermediate carbs. These are the, you know, the rice, bread, pasta, potatoes everybody's so afraid of, but if you're working out, if you're exercising and getting the kind of physical activity your body needs, then you actually need those carbs to refuel the body's carbohydrate fuel tank. So you have enough energy to work out again the next day. Fat actually burns in the flame of carbohydrate feeding to a certain degree. So if you are active the way I talk about it in the book, and if you're not active, you know, you're missing out on the foundation principle of what wellness is all about and longevity is all about. You've got to have some cardiovascular fitness, and you need to have some training to keep your muscles strong, or you're just asking for serious degenerative problems. And then the final category are these bad carbohydrates. But I allow some. You can't take everything away from people. Right. So what I take away from people in the book are the high saturated fat and high trans fat foods that clog arteries and raise cholesterol and make the blood sticky and creating the likelihood that there'll be a final episode of platelets clumping together leading to a final event in vascular disease.
And then give us an example of some of those.
Well, you know, red meat and pork and high-fat dairy products loaded with saturated fat, organ meats with all their cholesterol, egg yolks with all that cholesterol, the same things that Dean Ornish talks about. He's 100% right. He's 100% right when he says you have got to have very little saturated fat in your diet. Sorry. And also keep your cholesterol intake to below 100 to 150 milligrams a day. One egg yolk already has 250 milligrams. So to have three eggs is 750 milligrams of cholesterol. Even if your cholesterol is not high, it's probably higher than it ought to be. So when you look at the Framingham Heart Study, the work of Dr. William Castelli, the director of the study, is showing that people that have a blood cholesterol level at or below 150 milligrams per deciliter generally don't have any cardiovascular episodes of any kind. And most Americans have cholesterol levels that are above that level. And so eating saturated fat and or cholesterol is really, you know, setting the stage for that to happen. So now a lot of those fatty things like butter and margarine and the end up in pastries and baked goods. So if we come back to the carbohydrate story, I'm okay with someone having some sugary treats, like licorice, jujubes, wine gums, gummy bears, low-fat biscotti, and you're going, how can a nutritionist tell me to eat foods like that? I'm not telling people to eat them. What I'm saying is that people need to know that there's something they could have that's a bit of a treat on occasion. But I don't want them to have, it's when they start eating cakes and cookies and high-fat muffins and the pastries and the other items that have fat and sugar, that's the recipe for disaster. So I allow people to have some of the sweeter carbs that don't have the fat attached to them. Angel food cake, another example.
Okay.
And so I said about 10% of your carbs can come from some of the bad carbs. If you are physically active, you're not overweight, then that's not going to have a huge effect on your blood sugar, and it's not going to clog your arteries with cholesterol and fatty, waxy material. That's the big thing to avoid.
Right, and it sounds like when you use the term 10%, and I know that I try to go on a, you know, like a 90-10 thing, to where you don't have the guilt, you know, of having those little snacks and things like that, as long as 90% of the time you are eating well, you are eating the things that you should. Is that kind of what you're saying?
You've got it right, Alan. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And then the thing is, you need to have your blood work done by your physician and say, okay, what is my fasting glucose? What is my fasting cholesterol, my LDL, my HDL, my ratios, my triglycerides? What's my homocysteine levels? What do I look like in terms of my genetic risk and the lifestyle behaviors that I have? So what I've published on our website, which we can talk about later, are what are the ideal blood levels for longevity? In case your listeners want to know what is actually what we know today to be the what's the medically accepted range is different than what are the ideal parameters for people having the longest life and the greatest amount of function.
Well, while we're talking about it, I mean, give us that website that they can go to.
If they go to the homepage of ADIVA, A, D as in Dennis, E, E, V as in Victor, A, ADIVA.com, they'll see under resources, it'll show optimal blood tests. And there's also at the top of the page, I have a free online nutrition lifestyle anti-aging assessment that people can take. In fact, every patient in the world should go through this once. It's the 160 questions that doctors don't have time to ask patients in a regular setting because it takes too long to do a proper nutrition assessment for people. So I've done
right.
it. People just have to answer all the questions about their diet, lifestyle, signs of nutrient deficiencies, medications they're on, health things they have, things they run in their family, their activity levels, their waist circumference, a whole bunch of things that they enter. It takes about 15 minutes. And then my brain is in the software package, so they get back about a 15 to 20 page report that really breaks it down and says, if I were you, these are the dietary modifications I would make. These are the exercise parameters to work within. This is the number of grams of protein you need each day, and here's where to get those grams. And these are the nutritional supplement dosages and ingredients that makes the most sense for you based on all these different factors. And then it says, and these things would be dangerous for you to do because you're taking this medication, you only have one kidney, you have hemochromatosis, you're pregnant, you're breastfeeding. Whatever it is, it says you should never do these things because this would actually put your health at risk. So that type of detailed nutrition lifestyle healthy aging assessment never gets done anywhere. And so I've sort of created it online for people to access, and then you can also get the blood work done by your physician and then understand what your the ideal range for longevity looks like so you have got some exact targets to shoot for through lifestyle intervention. And if that can't do it, then you need medications to get you there.
Well, and I think that's great, and I think right now we have so many people out there. I mean, aging is such a big issue right now that it's amazing that they can go to this website. They can figure out how to do it themselves and not have to go again to, they have now these clinics and stuff like that to where they're going to do a lot of special things for you. What you're saying is there's a whole lot you can just do for yourself just by knowing what you need to know.
There's so much that the individual can do for themselves.
Well,
and also people need to get some level of education as to how those things actually protect them. So for me to say that broccoli is good for you, it's like, that's a nice statement. But when you understand that it's the indole 3 carbonyl and the sulforaphanes in that broccoli that speed up detoxification activity of the liver to get rid of cancer-causing agents and help your body detoxify certain hormones so they become less damaging, or you have less dangerous forms of the hormone estrone, less inclined to cause breast cancer, for instance, in women. When that's explained by somebody, they go, now broccoli, you know, it takes on a totally different meaning when we talk about these cruciferous vegetables, as an example.
Right, which also ties right into, again, part of the show, which is Answers for the Family. You know, we as parents at this point, we're trying to tell our kids, okay, we want you to eat this way and want you to eat that way. Just by the sheer fact of being the parent, they're not going to listen. You know, so when you're saying, you know, you need to eat more vegetables, you need to not go to McDonald's, you know, when you're off with your friends, or, you know, different things like that, or whatever fast food. What I loved about reading this, and by the way, one of the places I was reading this was I was with one of my sons, and it had more of an effect when I read something and said, you know, the reason that green leafy vegetables are good for you are, and then I explained it out. And he seemed to listen more, because now it's not just Dad saying you should eat this, but it's saying, here's why. Not because Dad says so, but here's why. These are the medical reasons, or these are the chemical reasons that they could do it. So from my standpoint, as I'm reading it, I'm now setting it up to, you know, and highlighting different things for it and saying to my son, I want this on your list as something for you to read, because then you'll understand it.
Well, thank you for saying that. And you know, when you're around children of almost any age, the biggest question they always ask is why. And so, yeah, it helps them understand why. What I've done to make this whole thing more accessible, I should have mentioned this, is that people can now download a free electronic copy of the book if they want it. But what I want is to get this information out.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a website you can go to get a free download of the book. Can I give that to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, if they go to optimallivingbook.com, that's optimallivingbook.com, then they'll see they can download a free copy of the entire book, so the whole family can get access to it for free.
Phenomenal.
I want this information out there. It's just that simple, because when people read it, they're going to discover what is a proper evidence-based practical approach to really looking after their body in a way, and it's not just me telling people what to do. As you said, it explains the reasons why, and once you have an understanding of how the mechanism of action of these things, it changes now how you feel about it, and how you feel is really what creates behavioral change to a large degree.
And I was glancing at some of the questions while you were saying that, and because we had mentioned red meat, one of the questions that I thought was rather interesting, where they're saying, I know we shouldn't be eating red meat, but if we did, is any cut better than another?
Well, yes, yeah, some cuts have a little less fat, but because in red meat the fat is marbled, that means it's sort of, it's in between the muscle fibers that you're eating. Whereas if you have poultry, a lot of the fat is subcutaneous. It's below the skin,
right.
And you can just sort of, you know, get rid of that fat. But in red meat and in pork, the fat is marbled in between the muscle fibers themselves. So there's no way you can get a red meat that's lower than 45% calories as fat. It doesn't exist, even if you have the leanest cut, including veal. And anything over 20 or 25% total content of fat is way too high. And it's not just any fat. This is the kind of saturated fat, primarily lauric acid, which raises cholesterol to the most significant degree, second only to the two fat that comes from dairy products, which is myristic acid. That saturated fat in dairy products, which is primarily myristic acid, raises cholesterol, you know, through the sky. And so there really aren't any safe cuts of red meat. So if you try to get ones that are leaner and trim the fat off as best you can. And I would suggest, if you're going to have it, not more than once a month.
Okay. And I have to tell you, I was in Brazil last week, and I could not believe it. I ended up eating more red meat in 1 week than I had in the prior 6 months. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
How much, I mean, it's, anyway, it was it was nice, but afterwards I sort of felt lethargic. Because I don't normally eat that much. Let me ask a few more the questions, and hopefully some of which are going to make more sense to you. I have one where it says, It says, I understand as far back as the 50s, they have known that milk has a certain reaction that tends to bring out criminal behavior in some. Is that something you have heard of?
I know nothing about that.
Okay. All right. I hadn't either, and I just thought, well, you know what? I'm going to ask and see. We have another one. It says, as an older person in their 60s, what is your take on diet and living with, it's COPD,
Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Yes.
So it's a sort of a chronic obstruction to air getting through the passageways to the lungs. And the question is, you know, where did that come from? Was it related to smoking or exposure to some environmental chemicals? Is it asthma induced? Is it emphysema? It's sort of a broad kind of question.
Okay.
Certainly, the person needs to, as much as they can, improve the ability of their cells to extract oxygen from the bloodstream most efficiently. So the way that you improve, it's called your VO2 max or your oxygen extraction capacity, is by being able to get a doctor to give you an exact prescription for the amount of sort of endurance exercise you can do. That's what improves oxygen utilization in the body. You need to have some level of aerobic fitness. And I personally would be taking high doses of antioxidants to sort of decrease the free radical damage that may be associated with the progression of that disease.
Okay, so high doses of antioxidants, so they can just supplement that, right?
They can supplement that.
Okay, great. Let's see. In regards to oxygen, then, oxygen is a healing tool. This is another question that was sent in. It says, oxygen is a healing tool. Do you believe it has value?
I recently took a friend of mine out for lunch. He's a medical doctor who treats cancer patients and people with MS using some, in addition to good medical procedures, also uses some alternative things. And there are these hyperbaric oxygen chambers. He now has one that he finds is useful for people that have multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
Or they're in an oxygen-deprived state, possibly people with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And there's some evidence that it may actually be helpful in some cancer patients, although it's pretty early to make a statement like that. But you have to remember that oxygen is a double-edged sword. Oxygen...
How's that?
For the everyday person who doesn't have a health condition, I'm not crazy about hyperbaric oxygen chambers, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
When you know how if you take an apple and you cut it in half and you expose it to the oxygen and air, it turns brown.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
Starts to rot. Because oxygen, is not only do we need it for energy, but oxygen is highly reactive. It's a very unstable compound. And so the dark side of oxygen is that 2 to 5% of the oxygen that we metabolize in our body generates free radicals. And those free radicals cause us to rot, just like the apple is rotting. It causes free radical damage. It can damage your DNA and create genetic mutations. It can damage the cholesterol in your bloodstream. It can damage your brain and lead to corrosive effects on creating nerve degeneration that we think is part of what happens in the aging brain that leads to certain issues. Those free radicals can also damage the back of the eye, leading to macular degeneration. So by amplifying the effect of oxygen from that standpoint, you're generating more free radicals in the body. It's not a great thing to do on a daily basis. If you need it for medical reasons, that's something different. But for most of us, what we have to do is be able to contain the free radicals we already generate from the oxygen that we breathe in. That slows down the rate at which we age. So it was Denham Harmon back in the 50s that showed us this. He created a super species of fruit flies that had their longevity was doubled. How did he do it? He got those fruit flies to be genetically modified so that they made a higher amount of a particular antioxidant. So the same way, if I take an apple and I cut it in half,
right,
I expose it to the oxygen and air, but if I squeeze lemon juice on the apple, doesn't it slow down the rate at which it turns brown?
Right.
It does, because the vitamin C in the lemon juice interacts with oxygen as an antioxidant, now destabilizing the oxygen so it doesn't cause such free radical damage. So Denham Harmon did this. He got the fruit flies to make higher levels of an antioxidant enzyme called superoxide dismutase that helped to protect the free flight from free radical damage from oxygen, and the lifespan was doubled. That's how important oxygen free radicals are to the aging process and to degenerative changes in our cells. So you need to just use the oxygen that's available that you need for energy, but at the same time be increasing your antioxidant defenses against the byproducts of oxygen utilization. That's where vitamin C and E and beta-carotene and lycopene and lutein and zeaxanthin and CoQ10, that's where these antioxidants come into play to slow down the biological processes of aging on a cellular level and protect ourselves against these corrosive effects of oxygen.
Wow. While we're on the subject of oxygen, we had another question that came in from a listener. It says, what is the relationship between oxygen and vision? It says, I was recently told by my doctor that the black clouds in my eyes were due to a lack of red blood cells, which was due to poor oxygen at higher altitude.
Yeah, so, you know, remember that all the cells of the body need to get enough oxygen.
Right.
So that they can convert food we eat into energy. Because 95% of all the energy in all our cells occurs through aerobic metabolism, where the body's converting food into energy, and oxygen has to be present for that to occur. So that's the good side of oxygen.
Right.
So if your blood vessels clog up with fatty, waxy cholesterol, those tiny blood vessels in the eye, the red blood cells can't get through and deliver enough oxygen to those tissues, then nerve cells start to die off in the optic nerve and around the optic disc, and that's going to affect your vision because those nerve cells are highly, highly aerobic in nature in terms of how they generate energy, and they use a lot of the body's oxygen in order to generate energy from the brain, and all the other nerve fibers in the body need that oxygen all the time. So if your blood vessels have been narrowed, and because it's low, this is what happens in a diabetic eye, mm-hmm. or people with high cholesterol levels. Then you go into altitude where the oxygen is even thinner, and that oxygen can't squeeze through, and you end up amplifying any eye damage that may already be underway.
So it sounds like what they need to do, first of all, is that stay away from higher altitude. But the second thing then would be is to bring oxygen with them, so that they can supplement the normal oxygen, so they would bring like an oxygen tank with them. Does that make sense, or does it sound?
Yeah, I have to go and look that up. I'm not familiar with them. Certainly that avoiding those, if they already have eye diseases, avoiding high altitudes is probably the most important thing for them to do.
Now,
in addition to day to day, you know, they need to get their blood cholesterol down. Raise their HDL, which will open up the cholesterol, take some of that cholesterol out of the artery. They need to improve endothelial function. So, you know, there are certain foods and supplements that can actually reverse some of that damage. And then, of course, your eyes are protected largely by certain antioxidants like lutein and zeaxanthin, which help to stop free radical damage in the back of the eye. Grape seed extract has been shown to do that as well, and bilberry extract. So someone who, if they fill out my online nutrition lifestyle anti-aging test and then ask them about certain eye diseases, they'll get a whole nutrition lifestyle prescription around that.
Well, that is just incredible. I think that's really commendable that you're doing that, that you're giving them that opportunity, to check that out. We're going to take a break, but we will be right back. And we will have more questions. In fact, I've got one that has to do with that came in regards to a reaction to an antibiotic. So okay. I will let's see, here we go. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more.
Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. Doctor, I've got one of the things that I read in your introduction, you had put in there that we have the potential to live at least 120 years and to enjoy a high quality of life throughout this lifespan. And this is something that I have said often, that I think that if we do take care of ourselves, you know, that there is, you know, a much greater life out there for us, both in quality and in quantity. Explain a little bit about your reasoning behind that statement.
Well, it's not my research. I mean, these are anti-aging researchers who sort of show evidence to suggest that the human genetic lifespan, the potential is to be 120 years, but not very many people are going to even get close to that. You know, in the United States right now, you have over 60% of the adult population is overweight. 31% of the population is actually obese, and looking at the body mass index, it's over 30. Childhood obesity in the United States has tripled in the last 20 years. So kids today are not even going to live as long as their parents. So things are going backwards, they're not going forward, even though we have more information about how to live longer and be more functional and what proactive things are the right things to do. Most people are not paying attention. They're not even close. So, you know, we're talking really in theoretical terms about living to be 120. People are not even going to close in on that in any way. So there's a very narrow band of people who have recognized this, that if they stay aerobically fit, they do resistance training, they eat those fruit and vegetables and get protective nutrients and food, they eat a very low animal fat diet, but they get the protein they need to maintain their lean mass, they get enough fiber to keep their cholesterol down and keep the colon functioning and getting carcinogens out of there. And then they take certain nutrients, antioxidants and essential fatty acids and, you know, a good multivitamin to get all the other nutrients to keep the body functioning. Then after the age of 40, if you stage in other supplements based on how these genetic time bombs go off, so males need to take special nutrients in after the age of 40 to protect their prostate gland. And then also, you know, as you get a bit older, you need certain nutrients to keep your joint cartilage intact. And that by age 50, your immune system starts to get weak. You need other nutrients to strengthen your immune system. At age 55, the brain stops making optimal amounts of acetylcholine, the most important memory chemical. There are nutrients you can put into your brain at that level, at that point in your life, to increase acetylcholine synthesis and to slow its breakdown. So if you start to apply all these things aggressively, then you have a chance of getting to 100, 110, 120, and not just living longer, but being functional, not where you're sitting there in a wheelchair and you have tubes from an oxygen tank stuck up your nose and you're on nitroglycerin for angina and you've had compression fractures in your spine. You're alive, you have a heartbeat, it's not living.
Right.
I'm talking about what kind of functional living could we have if we really were to be aggressive and apply these things in a way where consistently we're just doing these things properly. Very few people are even close to meeting that sort of criteria.
Now, is
it possible? Yes, it's possible.
Are these nutrients that we're lacking now, are they things that used to be in the soil that have now, over a period of time, been taken out of our soil? And is that why we need to supplement?
Well, you know, if in terms of, you know, antioxidants, B vitamins, and vitamins and minerals, understand that our predecessors were much more physically active than us. You know, they worked the fields, and they were hunter-gatherers, and they consumed 3,000 to 4,000 calories a day minimum just to sustain life. And so when you're eating that much food and you're eating a lot of natural foods, you're getting more of those protective nutrients.
Good point.
So because we don't eat the volume of food, because we're not nearly as active, our bodies don't consume as many calories, and we're eating a lot more empty nutrients from, you know, white bread and white rice and processed foods and all this jazz, then, you know, we're not getting those nutrients. But anti-aging research has shown this, that even if you're eating a healthy diet, that you need to get to super physiological levels of certain nutrients from supplementation to get maximum defense against free radicals. Then after the age of 40, there are certain things you can't get from food that have been shown to be really useful. So let's take the male prostate gland as an example. After the age of 40, the male prostate gland starts to convert more testosterone into a more dangerous type of testosterone called dihydrotestosterone, or DHT. There's an enzyme there called the 5-alpha reductase enzyme. If you block the 5-alpha reductase enzyme, you don't build up DHT as quickly. DHT, when it's building up, DHT causes the cells of the prostate gland to multiply at a much faster rate. So the prostate gland now is enlarging, the mass is increasing, and when cells divide too quickly, they make more genetic mistakes that can lead to cancer. So there's a drug called Proscar, also known as finasteride, and it blocks the 5-alpha reductase enzyme to decrease DHT buildup in the prostate gland. It's been shown to help manage enlarged prostates. But the thing is this, there are certain natural agents that actually outperform the drug finasteride. And so saw palmetto and pygium and beta-cytosterol. You go and look in the British Journal of Urology and in Lancet, you look at the comparative studies in the Journal of the American Medical Association. The herbal agents actually outperform the drug. Saw palmetto, pygium, beta-cytosterol, soy isoflavones. Those things, not only do they block the buildup of DHT in the prostate gland, but they have secondary effects so that if a prostate cancer cell is starting to emerge, it encourages it to commit suicide through apoptosis, and it also cuts off the secretion of those cancer cells of what's known as vascular endothelial-derived growth factor so that the cells can't get access to the blood they need to keep cell division going. So these herbal agents, which you can't get in any food, this has to be taken as a supplement at specific doses, at specific standardized grades. They have these benefits that food alone can't provide. Drugs alone can't do this. This is why supplementation of targeted nutrients that have an evidence-based support becomes a really important adjunct to the anti-aging strategies that I talk about in the book. So the male prostate gland, you want to maximize protection because 1 in 6 men now develops prostate cancer.
Right.
If you live to be old enough, 90% of men have enlarged prostate problems that are clinically significant. It's avoidable, but diet and exercise alone can't do it.
Well, if I hear you correctly, you're saying that it will even retard someone who has already been diagnosed? Is that correct?
Look at the International Journal of Nutrition and Cancer, just in the last 2 years, has shown several reports to go like this. They take men that already have existing prostate cancer that's localized to the prostate gland. Now, sometimes they don't do surgery right away because those men are high risk for dying on the table if they have any comorbidity issues. Mm-hmm. So they say, let's just watch how quickly the PSA rises. If the prostate-specific antigen is not, if the doubling time is less than 24 months, then usually that cancer is not that aggressive. So they sometimes will just do watchful waiting. So in different studies, they've given men supplementation of soy isoflavones as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And they show that they could slow down the rise of the PSA very, very dramatically to the point where the doubling time was like, 5 years instead of, 24 months. And saying, oh, this makes it much, how is that happening? The isoflavones are encouraging some of those cells to commit suicide. That's how it's happening. Also, we've seen that high doses of vitamin D, 2,000 IUs a day, has been shown to slow the progression of prostate cancer. Dean Ornish showed in his study of men with localized prostate cancer, a supplementation with omega-3 fats and vitamin E and lycopene was able to do the same thing. So yes, those nutrients don't just help to prevent the disease. They have application as part of the adjunctive nutritional management of those diseases, not instead of good medicine, but as part of the complementary campaign that should be part of the management protocol. So these nutrients have secondary effects. Beta-cytosterol does the same thing, which is an herbal agent that you get from different sources, but it's been shown to induce programmed cell death of certain types of cancer cell lines. Vitamin E succinate, that form of vitamin E succinate also has tremendous anti-cancer properties.
All right. Now, a lot of us have heard the thing that says that if you're taking supplements and you're taking them orally, that you're losing 90% of it in your stomach. I mean, these are things that, that some of us hear. What is the best way to take supplements to get the greatest benefit from them?
You always take supplements with a meal. either right at the meal or within, you know, 15 or 30 minutes afterwards. And then the different, all nutrients are absorbed with a different sort of fractional absorption rate. It's not like you can make a blanket statement and say that, you know, 50% gets absorbed and 90% gets. Every nutrient has its own capacity for absorption. But if you take your supplements with a meal, you're going to maximize the absorption capacity. So if I take an example, let's use calcium as an example.
Okay.
That under the best circumstances, the calcium from food or from any supplement you can show me, about 30 to 35% of that calcium will get absorbed. The other 65 to 70% of that calcium stays in the intestinal tract, and when you have a bowel movement, you lose it. But that doesn't mean that it's not helping you. The calcium that you don't absorb, by the way, that's in your fecal matter, is actually going to bind to what are called bile acids and stop them from becoming converted to cancer-causing secondary sterols in the large intestine. Higher calcium intakes are mm-hmm. linked to a reduction in risk of colon cancer. So in this instance, some of the nutrient that you don't absorb into the bloodstream is actually highly beneficial, and calcium is an example of that.
Okay, but now, on the other hand, we hear lots of things in regards to dairy products, which a lot of us, you know, drink to get our calcium, that there are some negative effects to that. So how do we balance that?
There are no negative effects to that at all. This is just somebody came up with a theory a long time ago where they said, well, milk is mucus producing, and milk is, you know, you don't, if I go back to the book called Fit for Life, you know, where he said, you know, you don't have, you know, squirrels drinking the milk from reindeer, and you don't have reindeer drinking the milk from, raccoons, and so why are human beings having the milk from a cow? You know, this is awful, this is toxic. So all this stuff gets perpetuated that has to do with philosophy. It's not science. Nutrition is a science. Mm-hmm. The reality is that from pasteurized milk, whether it's milk or yogurt, that calcium is so highly bioavailable, it's the gold standard in terms of calcium absorption. About 30 to 35% of the calcium from pasteurized dairy products has been shown through radioisotope studies to get absorbed into the bloodstream highly efficiently. And so you just discard all that craziness. Now,
okay.
If you're allergic to milk, then you can't have it. If you have lactose intolerance, then you'd have to use a dairy product that is, lactose reduced, or you have it with lactase enzyme. I'm not saying you have to have dairy products. I don't particularly like them, but I don't want to tell you that dairy products are not good for you, because that's an insane thing for anybody to say.
All right. Well, and I appreciate you touching on that, because I think that's one of the things that's been told over and over, and I hear it from lots of people, you know, that are saying that they've heard it, I guess, so many times that it now becomes a truth to them, and apparently it's not.
You know, Alan, eating low-fat yogurt that has a live bacterial culture in it is one of the healthiest things you could ever do, as long as the milk fat is under 2% milk fat. It's the fat that's in dairy products that's so damaging. So if you're having 1% or non-fat milk or yogurt, you're in great shape, and particularly yogurt where there's a live bacterial culture to help reconstitute the bacteria in the large intestine, the friendly bacteria that do so many great things for us. And this is where cheese is the problem, because most cheeses are between 27 and 32% milk fat. That means that by
wow.
calories, most cheeses are 80 to 95% calories as fat. That's way off the radar. Cheese is the huge problem in the world of dairy products. It's clogging people's arteries, making their blood sticky, and creating a soil in which cancer can grow much more easily within the body. Cheese is actually the problem in the dairy world. And then ice cream, whipped cream, cream cheese, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's like, I don't even want to talk about that.
let me change direction a little bit as it relates to meds such as antibiotics. Again, another question that came in, and again, the listeners, I want you to know, I really appreciate you emailing in these questions, and so I really try to make sure that we get to all of them. Now, this one says, I had a reaction to a med, and then in parentheses it says an antibiotic called Cipro that gave me severe tendinitis and cramping in my legs. One leg is fine now, the other is still cramping. What can I do to stop the cramping?
So they were on Cipro. I'm assuming they went off it.
Yes.
So there were some neuromuscular side effects. Now that they're off the drug, I would suggest they go onto a high-potency multivitamin that has a B50 complex in it, has 1,000 milligrams of C, 400 IUs of vitamin E. Those are nutrients that help in terms of nerve repair and to block some possible nerve damage that may have developed. And then also a combination of essential fatty acids in the capsule. There should be flaxseed oil, borage seed oil, and fish oil. So if they go to that website I gave you originally, adiva.com, which is A, D as in Dennis, E, V as in Victor, and then A, adiva.com.
Okay.
I created some formulations for Adiva that might be suitable for this person. But the high-potency multivitamin and nature's essential oils, those two would be very useful. And there's little video clips on each of the products so the person could understand them in terms of what their application is. And then if they have a question, they can always just email me. But that would make the most sense to me.
All right. I appreciate that. We've got about 5 minutes. What I want to tell everybody out there, if you're driving, if you weren't able to write that down, I think everybody needs to have this website. If you go ahead and email us, a lot of you know the Answers for the Family. That's answers, the numeral for the family.com. If you have any questions or even on getting that website, just go ahead and shoot in your emails to us. We will get you out that website, or any questions that you might have for the doctor, we'll shoot those over as well. Now, again, we've got about 5 more minutes. Let's look at it from the standpoint that we're talking about a family, and you have the opportunity to consult with them to say, how can we set up a eating lifestyle or supplement lifestyle for us and our kids that everybody can follow?
Great. That's a great question. I'll give you the whole answer in a second, but just so you know this, to show you how receptive kids are, I often go into grade schools and high schools and teach a little nutrition seminar for kids just because it's fun to do. Just do it for the fun of it, actually, because kids, especially if they're athletic, if the kids are in sports especially, they just love the message. And I show them how they can increase their muscle mass, their lean mass, get more explosive power through exercise and diet, and also show them how certain nutrients are used in the body for certain purposes. Kids it's easier for me to change the dietary behaviors of a kid than it is an adult. Adults are often very dug in. They have their belief systems, mm-hmm. and they're attached to certain foods. I can usually get kids to change pretty quickly, but you have to give them the reason why. So honestly, if people were just, they don't have to buy my book. If they just go to that webpage, they can download the book for free. They go to optimallivingbook.com, download the book, and just simply print off a chapter every week and have everyone in the house read it. It's written at a level that kids 12 years old and older can understand. So if they read certain parts of this book, it's going to change how they understand food. And by the time you get to chapter number 4, I believe, that's where I lay out the whole dietary program. How do you take that theory and apply it to what do I have for breakfast? What do I have for lunch? What do I have for dinner? What kind of snacks are okay? If I go into certain restaurants and fast food places, what are the items in there that are within the safe range for me to have? So that in any situation, whether it's an adult or a child, they'll know how to make healthier choices and why those are healthier choices, how it's working with their body to keep them consistent with the overall program. So it's all in the book, to be quite honest with you.
Well, and again, I'm about halfway through it right now, and I'm excited about it. I don't know how much my kids are, because they can already see me cooking different things. I was making something last night, and they're, Dad, where'd you get this idea? Well, I went out and wanted to make sure that we had more green leafy vegetables than we've been having lately.
That's great.
Again, I'm just so thankful that you came on. Everybody, if you didn't get a chance to write that down, I'm amazed that you've got all this information on there and that it's out there. Remember, it's out there. It's for free. And that's A as in Apple, D as in David, E Edward, V Victor, aapple.com. Go there. Check out that website. You'll be able to learn a lot about what it is that you're doing and learn a lot about what it is that you should be doing.
And they can take that natural health test right there on the website. So they should look for that icon to click the health test so they get an individualized report. And also, if they want a free copy of the book, it's at optimallivingbook.com.
All right. Again, thank you so much. I may have some questions for you myself. I'm going to go on the website. I may be checking.
You know, Alan, if your listeners have any, if they're looking, you know, I've made a lot of bold statements today.
Yeah.
So I have review papers that have all the scientific references in them that sort of support everything that I've said. So if they want a greater level of documentation for the things I'm talking about, have them email me. I'll be happy to send them the research reviews. I've written over 300 different published papers in different journals and publications that are at a very academic level and have all the scientific references there to support the contentions that I talk about. If people are looking for more of that research, just have them email me. I'll be happy to send them anything they want to see.
You've got it. Thank you so much. We're out of time. Keep doing what you're doing out there. I think you're helping all of us.
Thanks very much, Alan. Appreciate it.
Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.